I feel blessed to have the opportunity to be here. And it was a lovely drive coming out here this morning. I thought, okay, you know, many times when I have to travel, well, when I come to Virginia or Maryland, because I live right in the middle of the district, I think, oh, you know, traffic, oh, beltway, oh. But this morning I thought, you know, Sunday morning, it's beautiful, I have plenty of time, and I can just enjoy this. And it was just lovely. And it's so quick. I got here so quickly, much, much faster than I imagined. So thank you for inviting me back. Thank you for welcoming me here. I love, actually, that was the talk. Right there. I love that synchronicity. I mean, that was the talk. Being open-minded, and I have to tell you that moment with that line in the song got me here. Got me here. I thought I was here, but then it got me present. So thank you so much for that reminder. The angel card that I got, and you know, Connie let us choose what we wanted, and I decided to choose something that I didn't think I was familiar with. This was months ago, and I thought, well, I got plenty of time, I can read, you know, I can figure out what I want to say, and so I took expansiveness, and then Connie sent me the card with the hot air balloon. And everything that I thought that I might talk about, you know, you live with these ideas for a while, and every time it came up, I just thought, oh, you know, it's so cliche, that's so cliche, I can't think of anything that's not cliche, everybody already knows what that means, blah, blah. And that went on and on. A few months ago, well, let me just say that for me, expansiveness meant to increase, you know, increase in scope, to stretch out, to unfold, which I like unfold and develop. I like unfold and develop. And to express in a fuller form. So I thought, okay, well, that says it a little bit more succinctly, and it also says it a little bit more deeply about what expansiveness is. So what did I want to talk about? So I made a little list of what I really wanted to talk about a week ago. And I really found that I wanted to talk about, let me back up a little bit. A few months ago, I heard a lecture by a guy, his name is Thomas Hubel, you may have heard of him. And he was talking about the four, what do you call the four pillars? Yeah, four. she did four. Four pillars of authentic awakening is what he called it. And so he named what they were. And the thing that caught my attention was integrating the shadow. And I thought, oh, that's interesting. I wonder what that is. I wonder what that's about. I've heard that a lot. Not interested. Shadow. Dark. No. Not interested in that. But that stuck with me. And then I went online to his, he had a preview of a course, and he was going to be talking about shadow integration. And I listened to that. And I knew that just the fact that I was really interested was already something for me, but I wasn't thinking I was going to do anything about that. And so I had a very narrow view of what that meant. But as I heard him talk, I thought, oh, we're talking about energy. Oh, we're talking about expanding. Oh, we're talking about... So that came back up for me last week about what I really would like to talk about. And so, lo and behold, I looked into my life and I realized that I had been doing, as most of us have, this shadow work for years, dreams, friends, relationships, it's all over the place. And we, on the planet now, that's what we're doing. That's what we're doing. We're doing that kind of work. And so I thought I'd like to talk about it because I believe that we, all of us want to expand. We all want to have our full potential and get there, really get there and get more and get there and get there and continue to awaken and awaken and awaken. And I don't believe that that can happen unless I really claim all the parts of who I am, claim all the things that are my hidden things, bring everything into light. I don't believe that I can reach my full potential without doing that. And that's about what I'm doing with my energy all the time, how much I'm pressing down and all of that. So I thought that I'm talking expansiveness. Well, I got to go there. I got to go there. So that's what I want to talk about today. This reminds me, there's a quote from Tagore that says, and it's on Chopra's website. It's the only, I went looking for it because I wasn't sure about it and I couldn't find it anywhere, but it says, we are all like newborn children. Our greatest power is our power to grow. I give you the drummer. And that's our greatest power, is our power to grow, and we're in charge of it. And we have free will, so we get to choose. Now, I can expand, we can expand with hoping for the divine lottery, where, you know, you wake up one morning and it's all okay and everything, you know everything you need to know, like the guy who had stroke of the woman who had stroke of insight, whatever it is. But, you know, that's one way, you know, hope for the lottery. Another way is to cultivate and do the work. And another way is to let it all go and say, you know, I hope it happens. And so I choose cultivating, and so did you, whether you use that word or not. You know, we're all here together. We're all doing this together. So what is the shadow? What is the shadow effect? And how does all that come together? And what does that have to do with expansiveness? Well, everything that I'm not awake to is running my life. And if I'm not awake to it, it's running my life. And until I become awake to all of that, I'm not going to have what I consciously continue to desire to have. I'm not going to keep growing. So I'm going to give you, there's a book called The Shadow Effect, and apparently it was turned into a documentary too, which I went online just to look and see what was there, and I see that you could get it from Amazon, which I didn't. But that book is by Debbie Ford and Deepak Chopra and Marianne Williamson. And they each have a view of what the shadow effect is. I didn't really read the book, but I was looking for other people's definitions of shadow, because shadow for me meant dark, meant I don't want to go there. It meant from my own childhood, it meant evil. It meant things that... That should never be brought to light, and threatening things that are threatening and that I would be afraid of. So whenever I heard that term, it was always like, well, you know, that's for people who are doing something else. I'm not doing that. But in fact, I'll tell a story that I've never told before, which, you know, hit me between the eyes. The day that I did all of my practitioner study work, and it took me about 5 years, 4.5 years, something like that. And the day of the licensing exam, I couldn't go. I didn't know, I didn't understand why. I just felt very weak. That was my experience. I was very weak, and I didn't feel like I could even drive my car. It happened just when I woke up that morning. I didn't have any pain or anything, but I couldn't go. And I knew I couldn't do that, and I called and said, I can't take the exam. And then I called my sister and asked her to come over. I didn't know what was wrong, but something was dreadfully wrong. I studied all these years, and now it's time for me to show up. And I called a practitioner who said, you're probably pretty anxious. I really didn't have the experience of anxiety about the exam. I knew that stuff backwards and forwards. I felt that I did. I felt confident about the exam, but I couldn't take it. And so I got in touch with people. People were praying for me and saying, you know, we'll come and get you. My sister said, I'll transport you there. I'll sit with you, all of that. And I couldn't go. I couldn't take the exam. And to make a long story, a very long story, a whole lot shorter, I realized at some point that I had to make it all right with myself that I didn't become a practitioner or that I did. Either way had to be okay. And that the license didn't mean that I was a practitioner. I had to come to terms with all of that before I could do it. Now, my doctor said, you know, well, your blood pressure was low and you probably, all that. You know, all that might have been true, but all that's a manifestation of something. And so I saw my Reiki person the next day, I think it was, or a day or two later, and I didn't understand what was happening. I just knew that that was a crisis point for me. I needed to stop, take the exam, not take it, any of that. I ended up taking it a week later, but meanwhile, during those 7 days, I saw my Reiki person, and I was telling her about what was happening, and she said, oh, that's energy. She said, that's energy. She also said, you know, I have somebody you ought to talk to. And so I went to see this person that she said I should talk to. I talked to him for an hour and a half, and he asked me just a few questions, just said, you know, I said, you know, this thing happened, I don't know what, blah, blah, and some about my life. And his response to me was, oh, you just need to change your mind. Now, I've been studying changing your mind 5 years. Like, was that the thing to say to me? I was like, oh, we need to talk. So I proceeded to be with him for months. And what we were doing was shadow work, only that wasn't the term. You know, that was just this and that. That was just tell me about, you know, what? Tell me about your feelings. Tell me about this. Tell me about that. And getting this out and then dealing with it and boo-hooing and going through a lot of pain and all of that. Didn't know that's what people were talking about when they said shadow. I thought, oh, that's just my life. That's just my past. That's just all these things that I hadn't dealt with that I thought I had dealt with. So that's my, that experience, I believe, earned me the credential I need to talk about it. I believe that experience was. And there have been lots more, and there were lots more before that. I just didn't know it. I just wasn't aware. So, Debbie Ford says, Jung said, the shadow is the veil between who we are and who we want to be. That's a really big veil. Debbie Ford says, our shadow is made up of impulses, thought, emotions that we find too painful or too embarrassing or too distasteful to accept. The hidden away, the pain-filled moments that over time harden into unexpressed fear, shame, horrifying shame, guilt, issues from the past that we've never faced, usually stemming from a defining moment or accumulating over years of denial. It's the part of us that we want to hide from our loved ones and our friends. Chopra says, and I like what he says, we live in polarities, good and bad, up and down, expansion, contraction, love and fear. And the Ayurvedic tradition says, I am not in the world is in me. And I didn't get that at first, but then I got it, I get it, that everything that's here in this realm that we're in space and time is in me. Everything I'm looking at is me. What I'm believing is, what I'm seeing is what I'm believing. And that's the way it goes. And so those polarities are my choices. And I can move back and forth, which we all do. I'm human. You know, I move back and forth. I don't know I'm in a polarity until this big thing happens and I'm having a fit or whatever. Or I'm in a polarity while I'm feeling really peaceful and grateful and all of that. But I'm there, you know, and I'm moving back and forth. So he says, to have a shadow is not to be flawed, but to be complete. It's the opponent within that exposes our flaws and sharpens our skills and ultimately uncovers our magnificence. So that's, you know, that's the cherry, that's the jewel, that ultimately all of the crap that I'm pushing down and trying to move away from and running and avoiding and all of that that I'm not aware of generally, I'm one of those people who says, you know, I'm courageous, you know, give it to me, I'll deal with it. But, you know, what's all that stuff I don't even know that I'm carrying around? And then I really love what Thomas Hubel said about shadow. And so I'm buying into that. I'm going to read it to you. Let me just paraphrase it. He says, it's energy that is repressed. And that energy I need this energy. And it is push down, and it's going to jump out some way because it's incomplete and it needs to get expressed. Any energy set in motion needs to get expressed. So we see it all the time. We turn on the TV and there's the minister who is a loving husband and father caught with a prostitute. There is the guy who is somebody has tracked and he's a community leader, and he's addicted to pornography. Mm-hmm. There is the people we interview, you see it interviewed at the crime scene, the neighbors say, oh, but he was so wonderful, and he's so, you know, he's such a great, good citizen, and all of that, and there we are at the crime scene. This thing jumps out. It's been repressed, and we don't know it's there. So, okay, so Thomas Yubel says that shadow work starts where my inner intuition of who I am and what manifests in the world is not the same. Growing up is an integral part of spirituality designed for translating higher insights. So everything has to grow up in order to get these insights and to translate them. We need all the developmental levels that we go through. We learn to walk, the basic tools of cognition, our social abilities. Everything went through developmental stages. Support was grounded in some parts of us, but not in all parts. Parts that didn't have a chance to develop, we learned to suppress. Parts that were stuck in the trauma, the early trauma, the wounding, the horrific thing that happened, had the potential to mature, but it didn't. This creates a tension within us that we call problem, stress. They are dark not because they are evil, but because they're not in the light of our awareness. We are energy, and mystical knowledge tells us that every energy that cannot fulfill its purpose will actually do something outside of our awareness. That's really good to know. You know, if I'm, and whether I know it or not, it's going to jump up anyway. We are energy in movement. We're like a ball that is rolling. Suffering arises where energy can't express itself completely, and it leaves waves. It has side effects. The whole shadow world, he says, is full of side effects. The tension is the energy not properly discharged, not doing what it's supposed to do. It's busy coping. It's busy keeping a lid on the past. It's busy keeping a lid on suffering. From a certain time in our life, we contracted, say, anger or sexual expression or our fear, and created a tension that we now call stress, problem, limitation, etc. We try to cope with it through entertainment, distractions, drugs, all kinds of sidetracks, and that will not allow us to feel deeply how stuck we really are. Or we go into deep depression, or the downward spiral into being very, very busy. We don't know how to solve it. We can't relate to it from our true potential because the energy is stuck there. We relate from it from a younger and a smaller and an immature place, and we usually project that on to the world. He says we have to re-own all of that. We have to meet it where it is, and we have to grow it up. I love the idea of growing it up. I can do that. Grow it up. Let it mature. Let me mature. Let me bring that all the way up to where everything else wants to be in my life, and then I can have my true potential. I can have that energy. So what is the takeaway from that, from those definitions? There are parts of ourselves that have been really painful that we've learned to repress and to hold down and split off from. Unwanted, unacceptable flaws, but all of that is energy. And we have energy attached to all of that. And we've labeled it bad. We've blocked it. It's seeking to be expressed. And we've found ways, some of them are acceptable, socially acceptable ways to express it. Let's say overachiever, say for instance, is one. People pleaser is one. Maybe we got to maybe roll our eyes, but it's socially acceptable. Some of them are not so socially acceptable. Addictions, not so social. Abusive, being abusive, having rage, those are not so socially acceptable. When you hit somebody on the highway, all of that's not so socially acceptable. So the addict, the hoarder. Interesting. The hoarder, the spendthrift, the anxious one, the procrastinator, manipulator, lots of them. They're all over the place. So what is the metaphoric significance of the hot air balloon card and expansion and this shadow thing? Well, the balloon is expansive in two dimensions. So first of all, it has to expand on the inside. So, you know, it gets blown up with the hot air, okay? And then once it's expanded and it's beautiful and we can see all of that, it rises and then we can see and expands. So our view changes, our perspective changes. We can see further. So expanding in this way, and then we see expands. So expanding in that way, so that's two-dimensional. And in our inner life, we have to expand. We have to expand in the inner life, or the outer thing is not going to look so good. So that expansiveness really has to come the inner first. Now, what about this hot air? Now, hot air, hot air, I think, oh, hot air, yeah, right. But really, warm air is lighter than cool air. And when the propane excites the molecules of air in the balloon, excites the molecules within, that warm air allows the balloon to rise. So when we get those things, the teachings, the spiritual exercises, all of that going inside of us and exciting the molecules in here, we are lighter. We are going to rise. The frequency is going to change. So there it is. You know, the balloon rises because that air is, warmer air is, will rise up. Another thing is that the balloon, in order for a pilot to pilot this hot air balloon, I've never had a ride, but I know somebody who has, okay? and so the pilot, you can't go from, you know, point A to point Z that you're pointing to. It doesn't work like that. But as the pilot, as the balloon reaches different altitudes, it hits air currents that flow this way and the wind and that way. So part of it is maneuvering, and a part of it is actually going with the flow that you, where you land. So if you want to go in some direction, you get to that altitude, and that's the direction you'll go in. So how is that with our life? Of course. You know, we got to get to the altitude where we hit that flow, and then we're going. We're going in the direction we want to go into. And if you notice in your own life, and I notice in my life, that you get to this altitude, and you're going, you're like, oh, this is really cool. This is a lovely plateau. I think I'm just going to stay right here. The molecules start getting, the air starts getting cooler. The molecules don't, are not so excited. The balloon starts going down. So gotta keep that going and get to the next altitude where I can go in this direction if I'm going to where I want to get to. So I love that. So we have to change our frequency to get to those divine currents. And that's what we're doing. You know, that's what we're doing here. So how do we begin to reclaim and integrate the shadow? Well, this is where I know sometimes that psychology and energy work sometimes gets a questionable rap among some of us in terms of our spiritual life, and we sometimes have it all separated out. This is where it all can come together, whether we, you know, see a therapist or not, whether we see somebody who's doing energy work or not. You know, we can walk. That's energy work. You know, we can pick up the baby. You know, whatever it is, that's energy work. Moving energy, physically moving energy. And also, what's happening in my mind? I can talk to a friend, a trusted friend, somebody who will is in integrity and really will give me the truth. I can look at my dreams. I can listen to what I'm telling myself. I can do all of that. It doesn't mean, you know, you now, oh, psychology, now I've got to find a really great therapist and I've got to find somebody who's really doing great, whatever the work is. But, and that's possible too, but it can happen. So three things to remember is to, first of all, we have to make expanding a priority. We have to make it a priority. And a lot of times I thought I was making it a priority, but I really needed a car. And so I focus on doing my affirmations for the car and the, or the whatever it is, the house, the relationship, whatever it is. And when the experience that I'm looking for, I'm not looking for a thing when I'm making my affirmations for a car. I'm really looking to feel safe on the highway and to get where I'm going. So the experience that I'm looking for isn't that so much the car, it's the joy, it's the ease, it's the peace, it's the harmony that I'm looking for. So not losing sight of what I'm looking for when I start talking about what I want. So making expanding the priority, and then being gentle with ourselves, really being gentle, not making myself wrong when I discover that I have this crap going on, has been going on for 3 years, and then saying, oh, you know, how could I and all that? No, not making myself wrong, but knowing that, okay, it's showing up. Okay, this is an opportunity, and going with the opportunity. Everything is energy. Everything is divine. Everything is love. That's all there is. So, and then inviting a greater level of insight into my life. And that is just a biggie for me. I heard somebody say that some time ago, and I put it in my journal to do that every day, to just invite, however you do it, pray it, affirm it, think it, say it out loud, whatever it is, but inviting a greater level of insight into my life. And believe me, you can say that and you can walk around the corner and boom, you know, there it is, you know, that strike, it hits you and you know something you didn't know before. Mm-hmm. Just a greater level of insight, so inviting that. So I'm also going to share a brief pass at a version of a process about the fact that bad feelings carry unwanted truth. And so how do I access that and how do I deal with that? All of us run into bad feelings, see if I can find some. Well, I'll find some in a minute. But think about the uncomfortable things that keep repeating in our life and keep showing up in our life. And we have affirmed up the wazoo and we have meditated and we have prayed and we have had treatment and all of that. And still showing up, what is that about? Are you still bothered by some family member's words or behavior? Is your nephew who's acting out really disgusting you? Are you still bothered by some events from the past? When you were 5, when you were 18, when you were 22, when you were 40, are you still bothered by that? Do you notice yourself demonstrating any of the above or below? Impatience, stubbornness, lateness, procrastination, judging, projecting. The list is inexhaustible almost because we're human. These things come up. They happen. But I want to put out there that acceptance is the attitude and that meditation is the tool. So acceptance is the attitude. Acceptance means not resisting. It means allowing. It means saying yes to life. It means letting everything be as it is and letting everyone be as they are. And that's, for me, that's a real tall order, especially the last, letting everything be as it is and everyone be as they are. I said one day we were in a circle in a meeting and it was with some practitioners. And someone asked, you know, what would you like to be as a practitioner? And I said, I would like to resist nothing. And someone said to me, that's impossible. That's impossible. You have to resist some things. You have to. But sometimes saying no is a yes. Sometimes saying no to abuse is a yes. Sometimes saying no to a dictator is a yes. Sometimes saying no to repression is a yes. So when I say resisting, you know what I mean. You know what I mean. So, what do we do? Now, those, the things, you know, the big things, that, you know, the trauma that might have happened when you were 10. I'll give you an example. Please don't let me be over time. Okay. Okay, let me go real fast. I'm going to finish, but, you know, I can tell stories forever. But let me just give you an example. Let's say there's a 7-year-old girl and her dad is sick and her mom has to work 2 jobs. Dad lost his job. And they decide it's better for her to go live with her aunt across town, you know, for a while until things get settled. So she goes and she's living in her aunt's house. Strange place, strange food, has to do other kinds of chores. And so her experience is hungry, alone, rejected maybe, inept because they don't know how to run the dishwasher and all of that. So that's her experience. And what she can come away with is feeling like a failure, feeling unloved, and feelings that she can't process at 7, but just knowing it's bad, it's bad. And so at 18, she's figured out how to navigate the world. The ego has helped her do that, which is a good thing. So she's got a happy face, and she is secretly having her wine every night, and she is an overachiever in the daytime and very, very busy being sure that she does it right. And all kinds of behaviors can come out of that. But that pain never got processed. The energy that she wants to have to create this wonderful life is still down there somewhere. It's still in there, and it's jumping out in the wine she has to have every night and hiding it and all the other kinds of things that are happening that she's just not aware of. So that's how that can happen. So meditation being the tool, three things. One of them, and the most, you know about meditation, you've done it yourself, and let me just put out here that if you aren't having any kind of change in awareness, you're probably missing your intention when you're meditating. I'm just putting that out there, and I'm coming from experience, okay? Putting that out there, that there are lots of things that meditation does. Our physical bodies calm, more concentration, focus, all of that. And we meditate to move beyond the busyness of our mind, to move beyond the polarities, to get to the stillness, to recognize that. So just for this moment, I say to you, what is it that is looking at me through your eyes? And right as I say that, you got present just for that second. What is it that is hearing me right now? And for that moment, you checked in with yourself, with your whole self, with your real self, with the thing that, your core, the container. You checked in with that. And that's what we're doing in meditation. Only we're doing it, you know, 30 minutes a morning or twice a day or a whole weekend or whatever. But that's really important. That's a part of it, to reach the stillness, to be, I don't want to say reach because it's not achieving something, but just to experience the stillness that's underlying everything. And so the conscious awareness of that, the second thing, it becomes a tool to be the observer. So when I'm still, when we reach that stillness, now this world, everything is this. Movement, up and down, polarities, all of that. The stillness is unchanging. It's the thing that is the foundational thing. Never going to change, never has, wasn't born, can't die, none of that. And so when that's happening and I'm sitting in that stillness, I can see what my mind is doing. I can observe what my mind is doing. I can observe what my body is doing. I can observe what I'm thinking, my thoughts. I can get in touch with some beliefs that might be there. I can notice that. And then I know what I'm dealing with. Then I know what I'm dealing with. That's bringing the light of awareness to what is going on. So just bringing that in my meditation is one of the tools, one of the tools of meditation. And another one that I like a lot, that I heard somebody talk about, and I thought, oh, I never thought of it, that meditation is mental hygiene. I love that. Mental hygiene, it means that, okay, so we're busy all day. You know, we're running up and down in the office, got to go home, get dinner ready, got to go shopping on the weekends, got to do all these things to keep this level going. Perfect, we do. We have to do that. And when that's happening, there are things that we can't do. Don't have enough time. So messages we didn't answer, something somebody said that we didn't process, something that somebody said that we did process and that really disturbed us, that's all left over. The list we forgot, the car, all kinds of things, that's energy that's left over. And so at the end of the day when we sit down, what happens? The burden of all those incompletions is there. Get ready for bed, and you're like, I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear it. Turn on the TV, turn on the whatever, where's the whatever it is, just because the burden of the incompletions is there. And that's energy. That's the incompletions are carrying energy. We're carrying them around. And in that, we have created a past, a present, and a future. Because we're saying, I didn't do it there, and I have to do it there. So where is the present moment? Where I'm over here, and I'm over here, and I'm over here, but I'm not here. And so meditation is a way to cleanse that. And so when we meditate, we actually allow that energy to start collecting like steam and coming back to the pool of water that it was, and then it's available. Then it's available. And it is true that tomorrow I may take up some of those things, but right now I'm collecting that energy, and it's energy that I'm going to use to grow. It's energy that I'm going to use to understand what it means to be peaceful. It's energy that I'm going to use to process what I think is trouble. So my growth is going to happen because of that. So meditation is one of the tools. And so finally, I just want to say that what is it like to ride in that balloon? Well, it's like opening upwards and outwards. It's like rising above the current context. It is like widening the perspective and letting our life be more inclusive. And it's like growing and unfolding. And so I say, I want to ride in that balloon. I want the peace and calm. I want the magnificence that it offers me. I want the perspective. I want the vision. I want that ride. I want to catch those currents. I want to be right there. So thank you for sharing with me this time and hearing me.
Thank you.
Thank you for that.